Sports 56. Here is your host, the voice of the Tigers, Dave Woloshin.
Welcome in on a wonderful Monday morning, April the 20th. Weather got the best of the Tigers' spring football, I guess, fan fest, really. It wasn't going to be a game, but it was going to be a nice practice. Everybody would have gotten a nice preview of the stadium. And, you know, we all check weather. We all got phones. We all got the apps from the weather stations. They all let us know possibilities. I think there was like 0.1 inch of rain. I mean, that was being on the safe side, so there was no spring fest. I think there could have been, but that's just the way it goes. But it didn't dampen Coach Charles Huff's first spring practice season with the Tigers. His quote, "Best spring practice I've been a part of holistically," which means it's all the parts coming together, basically. And he clearly was happy with what he saw, the quarterback battle. That's undecided. We knew that that would be the case. Aaron Nolan, Marcus Stokes, you're not going to know until like maybe a week before the regular season starts. They'll go through fall scrimmages and everything else before they determine that. It sure looks like on the defensive side that the Tigers linebacker Mike Montgomery is going to be a leader, and the cornerback, defensive back Ian Foster is going to be a leader. Looks like they're going to be pretty solid there. They did not establish a two deep. That will be for fall practice. I thought it was interesting how this guy, he really searches for every little detail and every little thing. He's open to trying to figure out exactly what he can do to make this team come together. He brought in Charlie Strong to put new eyes on there. Same thing for Jimbo Fisher. I didn't realize he was at all close or had a relationship with Jimbo Fisher, but I think this is all the Nick Saban connection. But a spring practice in the books for Charles Huff in his first term here with the University of Memphis. A lot of things happened over the weekend. You know what we do? We do a thing called medals. We got this busy show right after that. TJ Reeves is going to join us here in a minute. Mike DeCourcy will join us middle segment. And then the man who this week will have completed his 100,000th lesson. Did you hear me say that? 100,000 lessons. Nice piece written by Jeff Calkins in the Daily Memphian about Ted Butler. We will chat with Ted Butler in our final segment. Medals brought to you in part by Family Leisure. You know the chemical sale is going. I actually got some chemicals the other day. It's just terrific. There's a reduced price, and it's going on, I think, for the rest of the month. In the meantime, they do have this thing they're calling the Battle of the Brands. 7 manufacturers all fighting for your business going on through May 10th, Hot Tubs and Swim Spa Expo. You're going to love the Battle of the Brands because you are the winner. I got to give a bronze medal to Matt Fitzpatrick. He won his second time at Harbortown. He's the first foreign player, European player, ever to win twice at the RBC Heritage at that beautiful golf course. By the way, you've got to really be a good player to win at Harbortown. You've got to be able to work the ball both ways, hit the ball straight. It's tree-lined the whole way, windy conditions. I mean, it was amazing. Fitzpatrick beat Scotty in a playoff. Scotty Scheffler ends up getting Matthew on the 72nd hole. I thought all momentum had swung Scotty's way, but Fitzpatrick hit a second shot on the playoff that was just unbelievable. A 5-iron into the wind low that settled about 12, 13 feet, and he made the putt. It looked like Scotty was going to bogey anyway. So a congratulations and a bronze goes to Matthew Fitzpatrick. I got to give Orlando and Desmond Bain, who's the glue, I think, of this Orlando Magic team. The scorer, obviously, is Paolo Banchero. But they upset the number one seed, Detroit, in Motown yesterday. They beat Charlotte. Many people thought Charlotte was the hottest team going in the play-in, that Charlotte would be the team playing the Detroit Pistons. That was not the case. And I think Desmond Bain had a lot to do with that. You think he misses all that tanking that was going on in Memphis? I highly doubt that. A silver medal goes to Stuart Sink. He won his first senior major. He won the Charles Schwab Cup last year at 51. So he's won like six senior tournaments. He'd never won a senior major. He has now. He shot a 63 in the final round at the Senior PGA Championship. So he gets a bronze, a silver from me for that. Victor Wembanyama gets a silver medal as well. Victor Wembanyama, 35 points in his NBA playoff debut. Remember, they didn't make the playoffs the last couple of years. He scored 35 points. They beat Portland 111-98. That's the most points in a playoff debut for the entire San Antonio franchise. That includes Tim Duncan and David Robinson, mm-hmm. who were both in attendance yesterday watching that thing. And then my gold medal goes to Clint McDonald, Anthony Miller, Doc Holliday. All three of those were inducted into the Memphis U of M Hall of Fame on Friday night. Congratulations to all who made it, those three in particular. And I know all three of those guys pretty well.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, my first bronze medal, I'm going to go to High A Minor League Baseball for the Rome Emperors. The Rome Emperors had a game this past Friday against the Jersey Shore Blue Claws. They ended up winning 3-2, but that's not the reason I'm giving them a bronze medal. In the minor leagues, in a lot of sporting events, they usually have themed nights of like something special going on. The theme for this game was Agriculture Night, and in the place that at AutoZone Park we would call the Bluff, that little grassy area in the foul ball area, they had sheep. A herd of sheep just wandering out, having a great old time, I guess enjoying a baseball game, almost got hit by a foul ball. I just thought that was incredibly interesting that there was an agriculture night and we had a herd of sheep at a minor league baseball game. I'm giving a silver medal to Luke Kennard, who showed up in a huge way in the KD-less Rockets, 27 points, 5 for 5 in three-pointers. And this stat was also really interesting to me that they released after the fact, and it was the record of Ohio high school boys basketball in career points scored in their time in high school. LeBron is fifth on that list all time with 2,646 points, while Luke Kennard is second with 2,977 points.
Wow.
So Luke Kennard, he knows how to score.
Oh, he does.
Showed up in a huge way.
He was amazing in that game. I really was.
He absolutely was. And then in other NBA news, very NBA heavy weekend, of course. A lot of great duo play from a lot of people, including Jason Tatum and Jaylen Brown, who combined for 51 points and 15 rebounds, completely dominating the 76ers in round one. And then on the other side, you've got the Nuggets. Jokic had another triple double, which is just as easy as breathing air for him. 25 points, 13 rebounds, 11 assists, and then Jamal Murray, who had himself a 30-piece. And then also a silver medal just to the West Division in the NBA, where all three finalists for the MVP award is coming out of the West with Wembanyama, Jokic, and SGA. So huge for them. And you gave him a bronze. I'm going to go ahead and give him a gold just because anytime you win in a shootout over Scottie Scheffler at the RBC Heritage is really, really impressive. So a huge, huge gold medal for Matt Fitzpatrick getting that win and winning his RBC for the second time.
You got to be a shot maker to win on that course.
You
I can
believe
tell
it.
You that. I got two quick rusts. One to the New York Mets. Losers of 11 in a row. That's the longest losing streak since 2004. They've got like the second or third highest budget. This is disaster in New York. And Bryan DeChambeau, who withdrew from the Mexico Live event, he said it was his wrist. This comes a day after he complained about the conditions of the golf course. Mm-hmm. And he was also 16 strokes behind the winner, Jon Rahm, to start the third round. He just went AWOL. Whew! tough year for him.
Yeah, AWOL is a good way to put that. Two quick rusts for me. I'm giving a rust to the Pistons, who absolutely blew it in game number one. Cade Cunningham played phenomenally.
He had
himself more than 30 points in that game, but Jalen Duren was completely absent and are now shockingly down 0-1 to the Magic,
well,
who are having an incredible run right now.
They just basically camped in the paint and
they
made him useless.
Yeah.
The Pistons got to figure something out.
Yeah, they absolutely
with
do.
That. I can't believe they'll lose that series, but this
I don't think
gonna
they will.
Be,
they'll
is going to be worth watching. That is for sure.
Yeah, they'll definitely get back on track. But then another kind of a rust for me, growing up as a lifelong WWE fan and seeing how there's a deal with ESPN,
yeah,
and now ESPN is covering it like it's a sport, like football or baseball or basketball.
Yeah.
I just find it kind of interesting because now ESPN, the app, the post, everything is flooded with the WWE. I'm like, they have a separate account for all that stuff. I don't know. For me, that just doesn't make sense.
No disrespect to my good friend Jerry Lawler. I never watched one second. And he was there, by the way. Never watched one second of it. It is not my deal.
I had my eyes locked on
it. It's theater, folks. It's theater with good
athletes.
Well,
now it's technically sports entertainment.
Yeah,
so
yeah. Well, that's theater.
I don't know.
In my estimation. Those are our medals. TJ Reeves coming your way from Tampa in a minute. He's brought to you by Landers Cadillac of Memphis. You know if it says Landers, it's going to be first class. You know you're going to get the best top dollar for any trade that you may have. You know you're going to walk into that remodeled showroom, you're going to go, wow. Then you're going to see all the new Cadillacs, which are just fantastic. And you're going to be dealing with the best people. And you ought to see how much you can save with the Landers Easy Pass at CadillacOfMemphis.com. Remember, if it doesn't say Cadillac, Landers, I should say. Cadillac, you paid too much. And this portion of the show brought to you by Shell Dunn. The azaleas have bloomed, and so have the real estate signs. Shell Dunn with Mark Spensdorf reminds you he's been watching the inventory increase steadily since February, and with the rates holding steady, the market has been exploding with business. But to get that business, you need an agent who is affiliated with a nationwide relocation network, has a strategic marketing program, and a strong internet presence. That guy would be my guy, Sheldon Rosengarten. You can try reaching him at 483-0546, and he'll answer by the second ring, unless he shanks and balls on the golf course, which is very rare because he's too busy working for you. When you want the job done, call Shell Dunn. They may call him the worst golfer in town, but make sure you talk to him or two through three real estate agents. I promise you, he'll show you that marketing strategy and you'll be on your way to the closing table. 483-0546 or MemphisRelocate.com. We relocate down to Tampa, Florida. TJ Reeves joins us now. I know he is... Bucks are getting ready for the NFL draft, but I first want to ask you. I want to ask you first about the LIV golfers and the prospect that the Saudis are going to pull the PIF funding from that group. What will you do if you're the PGA CEO now? What do you do with John Rahm, with Bryson DeChambeau, who's acting like a little spoiled baby, even Cam Smith? Those are the only three I would really even care about. How would you integrate them back into the PGA, if indeed at all? You heard Tom Watson say, you know, lifetime ban is a lifetime ban.
Interesting. Yeah, except in sports. Lifetime bans usually last like a year, and then we let people back in. First of all, let's cover some quick ground. You have completed another lap around the sun. Congratulations to you.
Thank you.
I will have been married 30 years. God love Mrs. Reeves on May the 11th. Soon after that, Thomas Reeves Sr. of the Memphis State class of 1967 will turn 80 years old. And the next week, my twins graduate from high school. So other than that, we got nothing going on in the month of May.
No. Wow.
So that is... That is crazy. One other sidebar, speaking of golf, I got the chance to interview Grant Boone last week from the Masters Amen Corner coverage and the LPGA coverage that he does. Great golf broadcaster on Golf Channel. Grant Boone is a huge Memphis basketball, Memphis State basketball guy, and we were reminiscing about the Mid-South Coliseum. in the 80s. Did you not know that?
No.
He's a huge Memphis State guy.
I'm a big Grant Boone fan. I never knew he had any connection to the
U of M. He used to live right by the Mid-South Coliseum in the 70s and the 80s. Growing up.
Wow.
All right, so he and I were reminiscing, just one more real quick, and then we'll tie it back to the LIV Golf Tour. And I said, I believe this is the case. May of 1992, you remember young, you know, green, fresh-faced TJ doing the radio. I graduated at the Mid-South Coliseum, and that may have been the last graduating class for the former Memphis State at the Mid-South Coliseum, because I believe they moved the graduations to the Pyramid, the Tomb of Doom,
that sounds right.
Later that year.
Yeah.
So somebody would have to correct us that knows that on the Mighty Sports 56. So we're going back to the dark ages now of the old Mid-South Coast. All right, so back to your premise. The first thing is they already let Brooks Koepka come back without suspending him. So one thing we know is money talks. Koepka made a $5 million donation to PGA, paid a fine slash donation to PGA Tour causes and charities, and he's allowed to come back immediately. So why do I think that if John Rahm and even DeChambeau want to come back here, that they're not going to be able to pay their way in and play immediately the same way? Watch. And if it's not, then we're maybe back in court.
Well, remember, that was supposed to be a one-time deal. You know what I would make them do?
Well,
I'd make them pay the fine for sure. I wouldn't give them any of the equity that they say will be about $50 million that they're going to lose. But I'd make them go through the Korn Ferry Tour. You got to win there if you want to get back.
You're trying to be punitive. All right, well, we'll see what happens. First of all, we don't know that the LIV Tour is going to disintegrate. Remember, just a week ago at this time, the tournament in Mexico was off and it had all ceased, and all of that was wrong. All of that was wrong. They played this weekend. They still have their money. And it still remains to be seen whether they're going to have a tour. Do they merge with maybe the DP World Tour? That's one of the rumors. Do the stars stay? Probably not. And then what happens? Here's another name real quick. What happens with Phil Mickelson, who has great value, by the way, to the PGA Tour for this thing called the Champions Tour, and is eligible to play and can play? And while Tiger Woods doesn't look like that he's ever going to be a competitive golf factor again, he's got to get his life together, Mickelson could be a real drawing card. Mickelson would be tremendous, by the way, in the broadcast booth.
Oh,
too.
He blew it. He would have been the analyst, the number one
analyst.
Well,
yeah, sure. But what do you do on welcoming him back or not?
I don't know if you do.
They've got to sort through a lot.
I don't know if you do. I really do not. I'm not sure. I think Phil became a pariah when he did what he did, because he was really the leader of making that a credible entity. I mean, that's the first really big guy Greg Norman went after. He got him. He paid him really well. How about John Rahm? John Rahm's made $92 million in earnings from playing on that tour.
This just into the newsroom. This is why they did it. This is why they all took the tens of millions of dollars in guarantees.
He got 300 much more. He got 300 to 500 to
that's
sign.
That's right. That's why they did it. And so stay tuned on how it all sorts out. The last chapters are not written. I will say this, but for all the history revisionism, the elevated events that are going on the PGA Tour right now for double the prize money, triple the prize money, with no cuts and all of that, is a direct result of what Phil Mickelson and the others came to the tour and said, which is, this is ridiculous how many billions with a B you're making, and you're not funneling it down to the tournaments and the players. And it's further ridiculous that we're playing every week with a cut, most weeks with a pro-am. This is ridiculous. And watch us go do something somewhere else that is the model of what you should be doing. And lo and behold, the PGA Tour relented, and now the prize money's much more, and you have multiple events that don't have a cut, that have a limited field, that don't have a pro-am. So they have the LIV guys to thank for that, by the way.
They should thank them for that. And I will say this. Obviously, the money was there, and Phil Mickelson called them out on that. But you're not going to see team play, and I don't think you're going to see all events non-cut. And this is how much money there is in this. John Rahm's caddy has his estate, 100 acres, 20 minutes outside of Charlotte, on sale for $14 million. That caddy.
The caddy.
Yeah.
The caddy.
Yeah. All right.
Well, you know, that's a Wolosian type deal.
Sure.
You know, I'll sell my ranch for $14 million. But Anyway, last chapter's not written on the whole Liv thing. Remember that they're punishing Patrick Reed because they don't like him. So he's got to be out until August. Then he can come back and play.
He's got to play. He's got to get there through the DP World Tour, which they have that's Korn Ferry Tour, DP World Tour. He's already won a couple of times. So I think he's already got, because he's won twice, he does get qualification in a year later, and he's got to pay the fines, which I'm pretty sure.
Which, again, if you're making some people be suspended and still fining them, I mean, why do I think the lawyers aren't going to get involved again with court challenges and things like that on why did you let somebody do it? Anyway, we'll see. Great golf yesterday with Scheffler, obviously, and Matthew Fitzpatrick, who Tampa at the Valspar back a couple of weeks ago, or actually now about a month ago before everything unfolded at Augusta, and now he wins again. How about the stat? Did you hear the stat that Jim Nantz gave? That was the first time ever in the 60-plus years of that event that two former champions were in the final group on the final day trying to win the tournament. Wow. That had never happened before Scheffler and Fitzpatrick. How crazy is that?
He's the first foreign player to win it twice. You got to be a great player, I think, to win that tournament, because you got to work the ball. I mean, you got to have a complete game. Here was the biggest stat that I thought was incredible. On the first day, Thursday, Matt Fitzpatrick, how many putts do you think he took in his round?
Typically, you would have, if you're having a great round, somewhere around 20, 22. I'm going to go 21.
21. Unbelievable. 20. All right, before we run out of time, quickly, yes. NFL draft. Big surprises. Yes. Good class. What do you think?
Well, the real interesting thing is, obviously, Mendoza goes one to the Raiders. And then where does Ty Simpson, the Alabama quarterback, go?
Quick nugget for you. I think late first round.
Okay, quick nugget for you. If he does not go in the first round and no other quarterback gets taken in the first round, that's the first time since 2001. Michael Vick was the number one overall pick by Atlanta. Do you know the famous soon-to-be Hall of Famer that was picked next in the second round? 2001 draft, the Chargers picked him. But he's much more famous for what he did in New Orleans.
Drew Brees. Wow.
That's the
second-round guy?
First pick of the second round with Drew Brees. That's the last time that an NFL draft has only had one quarterback taken in the first round. Stay tuned for that. Does the Notre Dame running back Jeremiah Love go early? The rumors are he might be in the top five. Everybody needs an edge rusher, including my Buccaneers. Yeah, there are several of them.
So do my Bears, no doubt.
Stay tuned. This will be crazy. By the way, they've reduced it from 10 minutes per pick to 8 minutes
per pick
on Thursday. So hopefully it'll go quicker. Used to be 15 minutes a pick, by the way.
Do you think a running back should go in the top five? With the way the game is played now?
Interesting on that. The last time, giving you more nuggets, the last time that happened is Saquon Barkley, who went second to the Giants out of that turnout, especially for the Eagles. I don't know about picking a running back in the top five anymore, but apparently somebody is about to do it.
Yeah.
And Love is an explosive player, but is he a 7 or 8, 10-year star in the NFL? Because you can get running backs in day two. You can get running backs on day three. The Buccaneers got Bucky Irving on day three of the draft a couple of years ago as a fifth-round pick. You can find these guys later, so stay tuned. And the rest of this on Thursday.
We'll talk to you next Monday. Thank you, my friend.
All right, my friend. Great to be with you. HBD, happy birthday. HBD to you. Thank you.
Thank you much. That is TJ Reeves. He's brought to you by Southern Security. Whether you're a small business owner, maybe you're buying your first home, Southern Security should be your trusted financial partner. For over 75 years, Southern Security's been serving the Mid-South with the best rates, because they can do things others can't. They're a not-for-profit. They've got the best service. They've got the newest technology. You should see the branch they just built in Collierville. It's been voted the best credit union in the Mid-South for the last 6 years. To find out how you can join the family, just visit southernsecurity.org or talk to a service member at 901-452-7900. Southern Security, your home team credit union, federally insured by NCUA. We're going to Pittsburgh in a minute. Our good friend Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News is next.
Start your day with Sports 56 Mornings with Greg Gaston and Eli Savoy. Weekday mornings from 7 to 10, right here on Sports 56 and 98.5 FM.
Now back to Wolo and Friends on Sports 56. Here once again is the voice of the Tigers, Dave Woloshin.
Welcome back in, cruising through a fabulous Monday morning. Every year, thousands visit Memphis and Shelby County, not just to hear our music or sample our food, but to take in a sporting event or a tournament. And now, if your school or team or league is exploring the possibility of hosting a sporting event in our community, that brings an out-of-town audience, you need to get a hold of Memphis Tourism and the Memphis Sports Council because they'll help coach you through the process. They can provide valuable destination insight and helpful planning strategies for a winning event. They're the pros at doing all of this. Visit MemphisSportsCouncil.com to learn more about how you can play a part in growing the Memphis visitor economy through sports. They really know what they're doing, and they love to help you. That's Memphis Tourism and the Memphis Sports Council. Every week they bring you Mike DeCourcy, who I guess we're having a hard time getting a hold of, although he just did give me a thumbs up that he was going to be on. So we sure we got the right number? Okay. In the meantime, I'll tell you exactly what I want to address to them because I found this incredibly interesting. Last week, there was a good story written, and I can't remember, I think it was Jason Munns who wrote it, that was talking about conversations with athletic director Ed Scott. And Dr. Scott was saying, first off, schools like Memphis need to protect themselves, and therefore they need to set up multi-year contracts that would include buyouts if a student athlete leaves. When you're in Memphis's position, and if you have a great year here and a school that's a Power Four, which has 10 times the money that you do, they can outpay what you can pay for that guy, out he goes. You need a buyout. That's part of it. The other I thought was really interesting because I don't know how many of the coaches in the country could do this, although it would be a part of their stake, and they do make pretty good money. I do think this was more directed at Penny Hardaway. He was saying, why don't you guys contribute some to the cause? In other words, put up some of your own salary to pay the salaries of the players. I found that very intriguing from the sporting news. Mike DeCourcy does join us now. Again, brought to you by Memphis Tourism and the Memphis Sports Council. So I just laid that out. Buyouts and Dr. Scott's hint to coaches that maybe they should come up with some of the money to pay the players. Good morning. What do you think of that?
Well, I'm honestly surprised more don't do it, and I'm not sure that more don't do it but do it quietly. I don't know for certain. I would think that at a certain level, a certain amount of money in your pocket, if you want to be successful and you want to continue doing that particular job, I'm a big believer in you don't buy a job, but you can buy success, perhaps. Yeah. I am surprised that we don't know more that it happens. I can't say it doesn't, because there may be things happening we just don't know about. But I'm surprised that more don't make it obvious that they are doing it.
Well, I mean, let's be honest. You couldn't say this about every coach in college basketball. Penny's worth, and I'm being, I think, conservative here, anywhere between $50 and $100 million. He could certainly afford to give $1 million of the 2-point-something million that he's making. He makes like $7 million from shoes. He could certainly afford that. I guess coaches that are making $8 to $10 million, what would be $1 million out of their pocket? That would be absolutely nothing in comparison. I think it would be really hard pressed for the coach at Wichita State or the coach at Charlotte to take money out of their pocket.
Yeah, I think that's fair, and that there is a difference there. And I don't know how much, if you if you're one of those coaches that's making $5 to $10 million, how much taking one out of that is going to change your season? It may, if you need that extra money and you can't find it anywhere else to get that one particular player that you know can make a difference for you, then it may make a difference in that instance. But $1 million probably at the level, the Big Ten, SEC, ACC, Big 12 level, Big East probably as well, or at least the levels of the Big East where they're highly successful, that $1 million is not substantially changing you. It may improve your overall available payroll by, what, 10%, a little bit more.
I was just going to say, that is a 10% bump, which is helpful. I'm certainly is not
helpful.
Everything,
yes.
but it's helpful, especially if you've identified a guy that you go, you know what, this I'll put it toward this guy because he's worth the money.
Yeah, if there's a position of need, a player who really fits what you want to do, and you're just a little short of what the other people are offering, I'm surprised it doesn't come up more often, honestly, Dave.
Yeah. What about buyouts for especially a school like Memphis that has a decent amount of money? I'm going to say $5 to $6 million in NIL money, and they've identified somebody pretty good, and they're paying them a decent amount of money. Dr. Scott's saying, I want to offer you a multi-year contract, not a one-year, a two-year, three-year deal. If you leave to go to a Power Four, God bless you, but you're going to have to buy us out.
Well, that's a fine idea, but why would I sign that deal if I can do better elsewhere?
Right.
If you want these things, negotiate them. The NCAA and its membership, primarily the membership, have done nothing over the course of this era, whenever you want to say it started. It really started with O'Bannon, the case in 2014, but when it really started to fly was during the pandemic when California's legislature passed their NIL rule and everybody else followed along. And, okay, so all of a sudden we're in this era and then it's starting to escalate. They've done nothing to try to negotiate with the player class. Nothing. And I at this point they've allowed it to get to the point where the player class has essentially no incentive to agree to any negotiation because they have so much leverage and therefore make so much more money. And there may come I keep hearing the word, this is unsustainable. And I'm like, okay, well, why is it unsustainable? Well, the people who are donating won't want to donate forever. So let's just say that all of a sudden tomorrow, all the rich people who are funding this decided, we're not doing it at this level anymore. We're going to cut it by half. And obviously they wouldn't do this, but let's say half of them dropped out. So then there's all these players are still making way more money than they ever imagined they'd make at the college level. And we may see a few more guys like Braylon Mullins just go ahead and go to the NBA draft. UConn's a terrific freshman who needs another year of development and instead is playing a second season at UConn. Rather than go to the draft and be maybe the 21st pick or 25th pick or whatever.
Yeah, but that's
it would be
2 years guaranteed money.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just saying that this concept that it's unsustainable is fantastic. It's what people want to happen. They want it to be unsustainable because they want their schools to come back into being competitive in ways they aren't now. The other schools have more billionaires than we do, so we're not competitive. I had a discussion with a Syracuse fan online who's so really upset that Syracuse isn't any good anymore. And I'm like, well, first of all, it's not all just money. And he said, I know, I've been a Syracuse fan for a long time. I know what we... And I'm like, okay, but when it was Syracuse getting more money because they sold 30,000 tickets and everybody else was selling 7 or 10, I didn't hear any complaints from Syracuse fans then. Now you're mad because it's just not working for you. That's not how life works, man. You got to figure it out. Everybody else did.
I'm curious. What did Braylon Mullen get paid to stay another year? I hear that A&M is paying PJ Haggerty $4 million. Now, if I'm Haggerty, that's probably the most money I'm ever going to make in my pro career. I don't see him as an NBA first round guy with guaranteed money for a couple of years. $4 million could be the zenith of his career, but I don't understand how A&M can ever recover that kind of money. It's almost like a lost leader. How long can we continue this sort of financial model?
But like I said, it doesn't matter. Because if it all went 50% or 75% down, it's still okay. So wait, like so the next PJ Haggerty gets $1 million. That's still a fortune.
Oh, I know.
And so it doesn't matter if this is sustainable at this level. But there's been no indication that the people who are funding it want out. We keep seeing that those things escalate. We expect, we believe, that Braylon Mullins will be paid in excess of $5 million to play at UConn next
year.
Wow,
$5 million.
That's what the reports have been. Now,
that's incredible.
I never know if any of these numbers are true. It's advantageous to the agents who represent the particular athlete for it to sound as good as possible so that they can be, so that someone else can be the next client that gets repped by that agent. But whatever it is, it's still a fortune. Well, and a quarter of this is still a fortune.
Here's my question, though. What did Kentucky pay last year for their NIL? Because I've heard rumors from 15 to 20 million.
I've the number that everybody throws around like a manhole cover meant to injure any adjacent Kentucky people is 22 million. I don't know if that's true
million.
Or not. But they invested a lot in one player who barely played for them because he was coming off an ACL injury, and they didn't do due diligence on what that would mean. Would the player be ready? Would the player want to be ready? I think ultimately there wasn't a great desire to compete, that it was more about protecting health and status for the draft. In a lot of cases in college basketball, I can't say for certain that that is what happened with Jaden Quaintance, but I suspect that was a factor.
So those boosters that put up $22 million bucks, you got to go back to them this year and ask for that money again. And my question is, how long? Even at Michigan, where they won the darn thing, I don't know what their budget was. I don't think it was $22 million. How long are boosters who have to pay for other things too, how long are they going to be willing to do that?
As I said before, it doesn't matter because there will always be boosters who want to win. And they, in the past, have built the difference now is that you don't build anything that you can get your name on. That's the difference. The you can't get your name on the player who wins your team a national championship. Like there's no this Yaxel Lindeborg appearance was sponsored by Joe Smith, the CEO of Joe's tech company, whatever. I mean it's you don't get that, but you still it's the same concept that before it was. Okay, if a practice facility is going to make us better, then I will donate $20 million, and then you can put my name on the building. Well, that doesn't happen any longer, or it happens to a lesser degree because more money is needed to fund the player compensation. But a lot of those facilities that were built weren't necessary. I've been in some
True.
Of the most amazing locker rooms.
I agree.
Who cares? Like, it didn't matter, but they had to spend the money on something because they were nonprofits, and because, well, somebody else had the idea to spend the money on a nice practice facility with unbelievable locker rooms, so I guess we got to catch up.
Like the waterfall at the Alabama football
locker
room?
There you go. I was in Alabama's football facility in, like, 1985 or 86 when Penn State played down there. And I wrote that it was like being in a corporate office. Like for U.S. Steel or Mellon Bank or FedEx or whatever, it was like there. It was beautiful. It was like being in a Fortune 500 building, maybe not quite as large because you didn't contain as many people, but all the same concepts and amenities. And that was in 1985. And look how far we've come since then in terms of how much money there is and how much money you had to spend.
Yeah. Next week, remind me because we're out of time, I would like to talk about the Big Ten against and the SEC, their thoughts on football, the playoff, maybe an expansion of the NCAA tournament. We'll get into that next Monday. Thank you, Mike. I appreciate you.
Thanks,
as always.
Dave. It was fun.
That is Mike DeCourcy from the Sporting News. We take a break. When we come back, Mr. 100,000. That's in golf lessons. That's Ted Butler. He comes your way right around the corner.
Did you miss your favorite Sports 56 show?
Don't!
Check out the podcast, broken down hourly, at sports56whbq.com or wherever you get your podcasts. Be sure to like and subscribe. Never miss any Sports 56 show again with our podcasts available daily from Sports 56 and 98.5 FM. Now back to Wolo and Friends on Sports 56. Here once again is the voice of the Tigers, Dave Woloshin.
We are headed to Putt-Putt. Golf and games on Summer Avenue, where Mr. 100,000, 100,000 golf lessons in 50 years? I can't
fathom. No, it was more than that.
How many years?
Oh, I started in 1966.
Oh, my gosh.
And I gave a lot of free lessons in New Jersey.
That's 60 years.
Yeah.
60 years. Wow.
Yeah, it's not all the ones at Putt-Putt. There were way many lessons before I came here.
Yeah. When did that realization hit? That was a nice article Jeff Calkins wrote about you, I must say.
There was a friend of mine I was teaching who came in about 3 weeks ago, and he asked me, he said, how many lessons do you think you've given? I guess. I said, I'm getting close to 100,000. And he goes, okay. So he told Jeff. And then Jeff called me, and he came out here for the interview. This was not an intentional thing. We were just talking. And I just started thinking back about it, and I said, well, it's actually right.
100,000. So you go back, you start calculating. That's mind-boggling.
Well, the year with Bert Dargy, Pro Golf Discounter, Hoffman Golf, my own business that I had. I mean, there were way many things I did before here. And this is 40 years here.
Right.
So.
That in its own right is truly amazing. And I guess the reason that you did this was you started by doing this to get free golf at Chickasaw or something of that nature?
No. That was in New Jersey.
Oh, New Jersey.
When I came home from college in the summer, you know, I'm going to Memphis State. I went back to New Jersey, and I could play this golf course for free. They say if you give the members some lessons, so which I did. And then it got into group lessons, like 20 people at a time. And then, you know, one by one at the end, it was just a lot. Before I ever went to Chickasaw, I'd already given a multitude of lessons.
My guess is it's clear you've given more golf lessons here to more people than any human being ever in the Memphis area. I'm not sure you haven't given more golf lessons to anybody in the country. Is there anybody in your league? Butch Harmon?
Well, Butch Harmon, I'm Ledbetter, Harvey Penick, those guys, you know, back then, Bob Toski. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sure that, you know, they've got a ton of publicity for if you're working with tour players. But and there's probably guys around the country. I don't know. I have got a little excessive with it.
Well, I just think it's incredible. I really do. I congratulate you. Tip of the cap. I'm so happy for you. But let's take a little walk down memory lane. You mentioned Bert Dargy. That was a great guy who just loved talking golf and making clubs.
Oh, yeah.
And he would give some lessons. But you worked for him as well.
I gave him for like 6 or 7 years. I had a room upstairs in Dargy's building. And then we moved over to Poplar Avenue. I had a room in the back like I do here. And all I did was give lessons. Bert didn't give any official lessons. You know, he would talk to you up front.
Yeah.
And mostly give you the wrong information. But he was a good talker, though.
Who were, over these years, some of your favorite names probably we'd recognize, your favorite lessons that you gave, your favorite students?
Oh, jeez. That list is.
I know you got a million. I mean, from David Gossett to Rachel Hack to several pros, you know, that are here.
Well, Bobby,
like
Cochran.
Bobby Cochran, exactly.
Right.
Who still
and
go
I gave
to
some
you.
To Schinnebarger, you know, and a lot of the pros around town used to take lessons when they were at Memphis State, and Dan Chartrand. And I worked for Jim Cook for a while when he was the golf coach at Memphis State, and they would come out here on Wednesdays, and I would work with the whole team on a Wednesday afternoon. And I did that with Christian Brothers High School, too, when they were winning state tournaments all the time. And that was all free stuff.
That was when Jason Walters was on that team, correct?
Yeah, Jason, right. And Bob Gossett was the coach, right?
Right. Well, Let's not – some of these great amateurs. I know to this day Ed McDougall, who played in the Pub Links against what's her name? married to Jerry West now. How can I
I don't know. I gave Jerry West a lesson, too, or three lessons, actually.
Wow. And he was a pretty good player. But Ed McDougall comes to you for tune-ups.
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah. We don't do a lot of stuff. He's a golfer. He's not a technician. You know, he doesn't need to know all these ins and outs of a golf swing. He knows how to play golf. You know, he knows his game.
Michelle Wee is who I was trying to think of.
Oh, crazy. Okay. Well, I never gave her a lesson.
No, you didn't give her, but he played against Michelle Wee in the National Pub Links, and I believe he lost to her they both got to the knockout round, and he lost to her in like the quarterfinals or something like that.
Wow, it's a while ago.
Yeah. Over all these years, how has your teaching processes changed?
I've been a fundamentalist from the beginning. I like the way Butch Harmon teaches. You know, he's very fundamental. And as time goes on, there's new ways of communication, you know, the video and all right. The new high-tech equipment and stuff like that. But it still comes down to four parts. I mean, there's a grip, there's a stance, there's a backswing, and there's a downswing. I mean, that's a golf swing. You know, if the grip is wrong, then you got to learn all the compensations that go with it, you know, and some people do. So I try and stay fundamentally sound where people can do it. And guys that want to go deeper, we will. You know, it depends on who I'm dealing with. Where are they trying to go with golf? They want to play once a week. They want to be a tour player. You know, it changes a little bit. And then I have to deal with, you know, what they can do physically. You know, can they move? Can they turn? Can they shift? It's everybody's a little bit different.
I do remember when I first started going to you, you just sort of referred to the pictures on the wall. Now you have all the technology with the video that you go back and forth on and then show us with a still shot that looks like that picture right there. And you go, right. Oh, wow, I do, huh? But technology has changed. It's made it easier for you, hasn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think so. But the best part for me is the video camera that I can slow it down frame by frame, show them exactly what they're doing. You know, when I first started teaching, I would tell them, but I didn't really know because I couldn't see it. You know, and at Chickasaw, it was going so fast. Heck, I didn't know. So I got into video right away. And then it in slow motion, you can see a lot of things. And there's more high-tech equipment now for the advanced, really superstar players to use, but you know, a 15 handicapper can't do all that stuff.
Can a 15 handicapper learn from the numbers that you get from the tracers that you guys even have at?
Oh, absolutely.
At Putt-Putt?
Oh, absolutely. You know, most of the people here don't know how far they hit the ball. They think they do, mm-hmm. but they don't. Usually it's the best 7-iron they ever hit. They hit a downslope and went to about 150. Well, I hit my 7-iron 150. Well, it carries about 128, you know, and then it bounces and rolls sometimes. They right. don't hit it 150. Everybody thinks they hit it farther than they do.
Yeah. Man.
So you have to learn to deal with that, too.
Yeah. I think that is. You got I know several players have said to me, and I don't know if you've said this, but they go, you know, as you get a little older here, go one extra club. Maybe it's okay once or twice around to hit the ball over the green, because most of the time you're going to end up being short.
That's right. Absolutely. You know, we can't move as well as we used to. You know, you can't swing as fast. You can't turn as fast. You use a little more club, you know, get a little humble and, you know, let your ego get out of the way. It's, yeah.
Yeah, I'll let my ego get out of the way if I score better. That's 100%, I promise you.
One leads to the other.
Let me ask you, because it's in the news, Liv may be folding. What would you do with the stars from Liv, especially those that were PGA Tour members? What would you do? You heard Tom Watson. He said lifetime ban is lifetime ban. I'm not sure I'd go that route.
I don't think so either, because they could use some of those guys back over here. You know, DeChambeau and I don't think there's very many on the LIV Tour that would enhance this tour at all if they could even make it.
DeChambeau and Rahm are probably the only two. I guess you could throw Cam Smith in.
Yeah, right. I mean, they're really good players.
How about Tyrrell Hatton?
Yeah, oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
But I mean, here's the thing. I'm not like Watson. I don't say never come back. Here's what I do say, though. I say make them go through the Corn Ferry Tour. They're going to have to pay the penalty.
And then
if they win twice on Corn Ferry Tour, they're in. Or if they're in the top 25, I think is what the end result is, then they're in. Otherwise, you know, too bad.
Yeah. Well, that's maybe a good idea. It's a hard thing to figure out. You know, you like to have the best player. You really would like to have Cam and DeChambeau and Rahm on this tour. Just like Koepka came back. You'd like to have the best players in the world, and they're in that group on the tour, and they pay a penalty to get here. The rest of them are just so-so. You know, they're just now starting to play 72 holes.
Go ahead. No.
Well, they get music playing and all that.
It's
not real golf.
And I'm not into the team thing that everybody thought was going to be the rage. All right, last thing, you know, as surprising is as 100,000 golf lessons in a career could possibly be, is that as crazy as Bryson DeChambeau using a 3D printer to make his own 5-iron that he used at Augusta?
That's out of my league. I don't know. I mean, he's on a different plane than anybody else. You know, making his own adjustments on clubs and this and that, and he goes out and he lines up wrong, takes the club inside, and hits a big old sweeping hook and plays on the club.
Yeah.
He's on a different planet than the rest of them. You know, he's taken this deeper than anybody's ever gone with golf.
Well, he's gone a little.
And if he can do it, well, you know, you just can't swing as hard as you can every single time and play great golf.
I agree.
If it all clicks for a while, you know, you get it for a bit. But, yeah, he's on a different planet.
No doubt. You are too. 100,000 lessons. I salute you. I clap my hands. I'm happy for you. I'm coming to see you in the next 2 weeks. We'll set that up.
This was not meant to be. This was a guy asked me off the cuff, and I told him, he told another guy, and he told Caucus. This was not intentional.
It doesn't matter. You deserve it.
It was just in conversation.
100,000. And Calkins makes a good point. How many people do 100,000 things over a career in one time? Nobody. I don't think I've ever done, and I've been doing shows in this market since 1983. I'd have to count them up, but I guarantee you I'm nowhere near 100,000. That's crazy.
So do we count the lessons I've given on your show and Georgia's show?
If we do, it's up. It's up. Yes.
That's okay.
Which we'll get one next week. Thank you, Ted. Right. I appreciate you.
Thank you, Dave.
That is Ted Butler on golf. He's brought to you by Memphis Public Links. You know what makes a great city? Amenities. We're talking parks and museums, and I think golf courses. And I think this city knows that. They hired Mickey Barker. Since he's been here, look at the renovations, including the private sector, which did Overton Park, what they did at Galloway several years ago, makes it one of the great public golf courses, I think, in the country. They've redone Audubon, where they can have NCAA tournaments on. It's become a heck of a golf course. Pine Hill, too, 90 years of history. They redid it. Now, the front is shorter. The back is longer. It's a true test, and you better hit all the shots there, too. You can't just roll it up and fake it. Not at Pine Hill. It's clearly an amenity, and Memphis understood it. If you go to memphispubliclinks.com to get your tee time. They are modern now. You can get your tee time online. You will be wowed, I promise you. Make sure you tell them we sent you. That'll do it for us. Johnny Radio is right around the corner. We'll see you bright and early tomorrow morning. Have a great day, everyone. We'll